The single most important thing is for us to stay unified and the world continue to focus on what a brute this guy is.
President Biden in Europe as Russia is accused of war crimes. It's Friday, March 25th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online. Join us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, North Korea launches a big missile. Afghan residents remain at high risk. Afghan refugees flee Ukraine. Remembering a diplomatic giant. Radio from space. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Joe Biden is in Brussels, where he met with NATO allies to discuss Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine, and where he announced fresh sanctions against Russia to help bring an end to hostilities.
Sanctions never deter. The maintenance of sanctions, the increasing the pain, and the demonstration why I asked for this NATO meeting today is to be sure that after a month, we will sustain what we're doing, not just next month, the following month, but for the remainder of this entire year. That's what will stop him.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has indicated he will attend the G20 meeting later this year in Bali, Indonesia. President Biden has asked member nations to exclude Russia.
That was raised today, and I raised the possibility if that can't be done, if Indonesia and others do not agree, then we should, in my view, ask to have both Ukraine be able to attend the meetings, as well as basically Ukraine being able to attend the G20 meeting and observe.
Mr. Biden says China should denounce Russia's invasion and abide by all sanctions imposed against Russia.
I think that China understands that its economic future is much more closely tied to the West than it is to Russia. And so I'm hopeful that he does not get engaged. We also did discuss today that there's a need for us to set up, NATO to set up, and the EU, to set up a system whereby we have an organization looking at who has violated any of the sanctions and where and when and how they violated them. And that's something we're going to put in train. It's not done yet. So with regard to Xi, I have nothing more to report.
Mr. Biden made a fresh pledge of $1 billion of humanitarian assistance for Ukrainian refugees while urging nations to stand together against the invasion.
The single most important thing is for us to stay unified and the world continue to focus on what a brute this guy is and all the innocent people's lives are being lost and ruined and what's going on. That's the important thing.
Meanwhile, the United States assesses that members of Russia's military, since their invasion of Ukraine last month, have committed war crimes there and vows that those responsible will be held accountable. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
As Russia continues to pound civilian targets in Kyiv and other Ukrainian cities and towns, State Department officials have been careful not to label the attacks as war crimes, saying documentation and investigation are needed. U.S. Ambassador Beth Van Schaack is focused on global criminal justice. She was confirmed by the Senate last week and had an important announcement to make on her second day on the job. She said a careful review has now taken place.
Earlier today, Secretary Blinken issued a statement announcing that based on information that is currently available, the U.S. government assesses that Russia's forces are committing war crimes in Ukraine.
Van Schaack said the U.S. and its partners have been shocked by images of Russian forces and airstrikes hitting civilian sites in Mariupol. Reporters asked her if the war crimes assessment also applies to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Van Schaack had this to say.
And as you mentioned, there is a chain of command when it comes to a military like the Russian military. And the doctrinally, we're able to hold responsible under international law those who are directly responsible, those who might be complicit or otherwise engaged in some sort of a joint criminal enterprise with the perpetrators.
despite video showing Ukrainian hospitals and public facilities being bombed, Russia has denied that it deliberately targeted civilians. U.S. officials say accountability will ultimately depend on the judgment of a court that has jurisdiction. Speaking at the United States Institute of Peace, Ukraine's ambassador to the United States, Oksana Markarova, remembered the first Nazi concentration camp created in March 1933 near Munich.
And unfortunately, today the history repeats itself. And today, again, in the center of Europe, now in Ukraine, we are talking about atrocities, about genocide, about war crimes and crimes against humanity.
An expert in international law, Jane Stromseth, said the International Criminal Court has started an investigation in Ukraine. Estonia, Lithuania, Germany, Poland, Slovakia, and Sweden are all investigating potential war crimes in Ukraine, seeking to preserve evidence for future accountability. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The story is rapidly changing. Follow it with us at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook, also at voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Search continues for second black box from crashed Chinese airliner. North Korea launches first ICBM since 2017. Rohingya Muslims hail U.S. recognition of genocide in Myanmar. Chinese companies in dilemma over Russia. Why Taiwan came up during Ukraine-related call between Biden and China's Xi. Expanded coverage of these stories and more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Check us out on Instagram, visit us on Twitter, and at voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. There's much more VOA Asia ahead. Right now, North Korea launched an intercontinental ballistic missile Thursday, its first long-range launch since 2017. The move significantly raised tension on the Korean Peninsula, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul, South Korea.
Analysts say North Korea likely launched an ICBM referred to as the Monster Missile. Japanese officials say it flew for more than 70 minutes, splashing down just off the coast of northern Japan.
There was no warning beforehand, and the fact that they made it land in our country's EEZ is a major issue and an extremely dangerous action for the safety of aircrafts and ships.
In response, South Korea's military fired five of its own missiles, what it called a demonstration of our ability and willingness to respond immediately and impose punishment. North Korea's last ICBM test was in 2017, during the height of tensions with the United States. Around that time, U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to totally destroy North Korea. But current U.S. President Joe Biden is likely to respond in a more measured way.
We know that U.S. is not going to threaten a strike on North Korea. So in a sense, that will help significantly, of course, right? That no one thinks that this is going to lead to war like some people thought may have happened in 2017.
South Korea will also soon see a change in its president. Former prosecutor Yoon Suk-yeol, who takes office in May, says he's open to talks with North Korea, but that now may be more difficult for the conservative administration.
They're carefully going to think what is the purpose of engagement, under which circumstances they will engage with North Korea. And I think this will make it even less likely that at least a priori they will be willing to hold talks with North Korea.
For now, the only party that doesn't seem interested in talking is North Korea. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul, South Korea.
Investigators in China are expanding search areas to find the second of two black boxes from the China Eastern flight that crashed in southern China carrying 132 people. Rain and poor visibility were making the search more difficult. Authorities say they had found what they believed to be the cockpit voice recorder, one of the two boxes, which are usually painted orange for better detection. Authorities said the recorder would be sent to Beijing for decoding and analysis. China Eastern Flight 5735 was flying from Kunming to Guangzhou when it crashed Monday afternoon. All 132 people on board are presumed dead. Happening now in Asia, Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh are welcoming the formal recognition by the United States that Myanmar's military regime committed genocide against the Muslim minority. Secretary of State Antony Blinken earlier this week announced Washington's decision to recognize atrocities against Rohingya Muslims, only the eighth ever such statement by the U.S. government. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us today on VOA Asia. United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet warns humanitarian and economic issues are likely to claim more lives in Afghanistan than conflict. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Bachelet recently made a one-day trip to the Afghan capital, Kabul, where she conveyed this message to the Taliban rulers. While there, she stressed the importance of respecting the human rights of all people. Bachelet said this was key to finding a pathway out of the country's economic, humanitarian, and human rights crisis. The High Commissioner spokeswoman Liz Throssell tells VOA Bachelet emphasized the importance of inclusivity in navigating the way out of the multiple crises facing Afghanistan. Throssell says the High Commissioner told the Taliban authorities the societies that are more sustainable and peaceful are those that consider their people as part of the solution rather than as antagonists to be suppressed.
The High Commissioner stressed that it's crucial to urgently address what have really and rightly been described as the catastrophic effects of the economic sanctions and asset freezes. Even though there's been a decline in hostilities, the multiple humanitarian and economic crises in Afghanistan may in fact claim far more lives than actual conflict.
The United Nations reports 22 million people, more than half of Afghanistan's population, need humanitarian assistance. It says one in three people faces acute hunger, 2 million children are malnourished, and more than 3.5 million people are internally displaced. Aid agencies report women and girls are particularly vulnerable and face protection risks. Throssell says the High Commissioner met a range of people who were able to voice their concerns. She says Bachelet met women who spoke about their struggles against injustice in the country. They expressed their need to regain the rights they had achieved over the past two decades before the Taliban retook the country last August.
They needed their rights to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly, to be free from the fear of reprisals, to be able to engage in politics, to be able to train as healthcare workers, and of course, to be able to have an education.
The new Taliban rulers say they hope to be able to open all schools for girls later this month. When the group was last in power in the late 1990s, girls were banned from attending schools and women from leaving home unless accompanied by a close male relative. At the end of her visit, the High Commissioner urged the international community to ease sanctions and unfreeze assets. She said this crucially would help to jumpstart the Afghan economy and relieve the suffering of millions of people. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said plans to scrap some of its controversial COVID-19 vaccination mandates marked a new beginning for the country, despite a recent surge in Omicron infections. Mandatory vaccinations will end next month for teachers, police officers, and members of New Zealand's military. You'll find more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, thousands of Afghans are among the refugees fleeing the Russian invasion of Ukraine. For many of those now crossing the border into Poland, this is the second time their lives have been uprooted by war. Abdulwali Aryan visited the Shahenyi crossing at the Polish-Ukrainian border and tells us what he saw.
These people at the Shahenyi crossing on the Polish-Ukrainian border are waiting to receive their loved ones escaping the war in Ukraine. Thousands of people are now entering Poland each day, and among them are many Afghans who fled their country to take refuge in Ukraine, only to be forced to flee again. Afghan refugee Zuhal says she trekked 4 hours with her 5 children to reach the Polish border.
از اوکراین کامدیم بسیار زیاد مشکلات بود.
We faced a lot of problems coming from Ukraine. We traveled for 18 hours. We were not allowed to enter Slovakia. Those who had Ukrainian passports were allowed, but those who did not have Ukrainian passports were not allowed. Then we came to Poland, and there was no problem.
Zuhal says that, like many other Afghans in Ukraine, she did not have her Afghan passport or ID, instead relying on a temporary document given by Ukrainian officials. She now wants to go to a third country.
We were helped with food and clothes. I have not chosen yet the country to go to. They allowed us to go to any country that we want.
Volunteers from various European countries are here to help Ukrainians with resettling in different countries. One of the volunteers who transports refugees to Denmark is Jakub Benediktsson.
I don't care the color, the religion, the origin, where the people in need come from. I'm here, and if you want to go to Denmark.
Other volunteers also say they will assist anyone coming from Ukraine who wants to travel to another country.
We don't separate between Ukrainians and non-Ukrainian pass holders, and we see that the border we are here it's just 2 kilometers from here. Of course, there are people from Ukraine, but there are also people from other countries.
According to Afghan embassy in Poland, between 2 and 3,000 Afghans have entered Poland since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The embassy says that it is helping Afghans fleeing Ukraine to cross the border to Poland. For Abdulwali Aryan, Medeka Shahenyi border crossing Poland, Roshan Nurzai, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, the 7.4 magnitude earthquake that struck off northeastern Japan last week might not have caused severe damage or a destructive tsunami, but it is wreaking havoc with the country's already fragile power supply. The quake shut down 6 thermal power plants, some expected to remain offline for weeks. Tokyo has issued urgent calls for energy-saving measures. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Madeleine Albright, the first female U.S. Secretary of State, died Wednesday at the age of 84. She leaves a legacy that shaped American foreign policy and served as an inspiration for many. VOA's Salem Solomon takes a look at her extraordinary life and career.
I state your name.
I, Madeleine Corbell Albright.
Do solemnly.
When Madeleine Albright was nominated by President Bill Clinton to serve as America's top diplomat in 1996, she became the highest-ranking woman in the history of the U.S. government. In her 4 years in the position, she led a U.S. response to the war in the Balkans and faced a nuclear-armed North Korea and rising extremism in the Middle East. She died Wednesday, surrounded by her family, after a battle with cancer. Tributes poured in from around the world for the woman known simply as Madam Secretary.
She was a trailblazer and a luminary, and she was the first woman to serve as Secretary of State. She left an indelible mark on the world and on the United Nations. Our country and our United Nations are stronger for her service.
Albright's life was shaped by the worst of humanity. Born in Prague, Czechoslovakia in 1937, her family fled after the Nazis occupied the country in 1939. She later discovered that she had lost 3 grandparents to the Holocaust.
They got my grandmother to bring me into Prague, and everybody just had one suitcase, and they got on a train to get out. And as she said, that was the last time they ever saw any members of their family.
Albright's family came to the United States as refugees. They settled in Denver, Colorado, where her father became dean of the School of International Relations at the University of Denver. A star student, Albright went on to study at Wellesley College before moving on to graduate school at Columbia University, where she met Zbigniew Brzezinski, who became National Security Advisor under President Jimmy Carter and brought Albright to work in the White House. Under Clinton, she served first as the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations before becoming Secretary of State. Albright said perhaps her greatest challenge during this time was the war in Kosovo, which threatened to engulf the entire region in 1998.
For the Balkans, this escalating violence is the road back to hell. Unless stopped, tensions will flow out of control. The results could be a full-fledged civil war, putting at risk the peace in Bosnia and spreading conflict like an infectious disease to neighboring states.
A NATO military campaign that drove out occupying Serbian forces led to a peace that holds to this day. Albright said she saw the moment as a success professionally.
What I'm really proudest of is what we did in Kosovo. I was very concerned about what was happening in the Balkans, and I really found it very difficult to watch when people were being killed for what they were, what religion they were, rather than anything that they had done. And to be in a position to have something to do with the United States making a difference there is what I think was very, very important. And the people of Kosovo, now it's an independent country, and there's a whole generation of little girls whose first name is Madeline.
Her diplomacy took her around the world, seeing the AIDS crisis in Africa and meeting face-to-face with Kim Jong-il in North Korea. President Joe Biden remembered her as a tireless fighter for refugees fleeing danger and for American values. Salim Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
New data from a sophisticated radio telescope in South Africa is helping scientists uncover the secret of one of astronomy's newest mystery objects, faint rings of radio waves known as odd radio circles. ORCs were first revealed by Australia's National Science Agency. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In 2019, experts at Australia's Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation, or the CSIRO, discovered spooky glowing rings in the sky using a powerful radio telescope in Western Australia. They were unlike anything they'd seen before, and they were called odd radio circles, or ORCs. They are rare, faint rings of radio emissions that surround a galaxy, with a highly active black hole at its centre. Experts believe they're about a billion light-years away from Earth. Their origin continues to puzzle scientists, but fresh information has been provided by new detailed images captured by the South African Radio Astronomy Observatory's Meerkat radio telescope. They've allowed researchers to peer deep inside the heart of the ORCs. There are now three main theories to explain what causes them. Scientists believe they could be the remnant of a huge explosion at the center of their host galaxy, powerful jets of energetic particles spewing out of the galaxy's center, or the result of a starburst termination shock from the production of stars in the galaxy. Professor Ray Norris is from Western Sydney University and is affiliated with the CSIRO. He is an authority on ORCs and says research into deep space has practical applications.
The thing about basic science, you never know what's going to come out of it. Just like with these orcs, we don't know what's going to come out of it. But we're likely to uncover new physics. You know, when people first discovered radio waves, they really thought there's no practical application whatsoever, and yet now we have Wi-Fi and TV and everything else. But if you're looking towards the long-term advance of human knowledge, human science, human technology, this is absolutely what you have to be doing, is studying how the universe works, finding out what else is out there that we don't know about.
The research is published in monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. You may continue online. You'll find us at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Also our website, voanews.com. We thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.